When the meditation finishes, please don't forget to smile. I've got to look at you, and when you're miserable, it makes me depressed. That's much better. Thank you. So, those people on the outside, please come in. Those people on the inside, please don't go out. Unless you want to go to the toilet or something. So we'll just wait and see for people to come and go. Is this being broadcast? Can I? Because the monks and nuns asked if they could pick their nose or not. If it's broadcast, because we can't do it. You're only me, okay, so you can do that. Okay, so here we go. Even though I've been in Serpentine, still been working hard, and still receive calls, and there's one fellow over in Utah, it's not Mitt Romney, by the way, he was asking about parental alienation. And he wanted me to give a talk about that, because he was having a lot of problem with his kids. So what he meant by parental alienation, if you're one of those parents who have teenagers, it's like you're living with aliens. You know, you don't understand what they're up to or where they're coming from. And it will give you a lot of suffering, indeed. So they wanted to have some words from the expert, because I know all about raising children. What are you laughing for? You come to our monastery, you know, the monks and the nuns, they're just like little kids. We are, come on, be honest. So we learn a lot how to raise kids. And there's some Buddhist stories to give you some understanding. And anyway, if you don't have any kids and you think this talk isn't for me, don't worry, because there's always that little kid inside your mind somewhere. And it's how to raise that as well. So it does apply to each one of you, whether you've got kids or you haven't. Because there comes a time in a kid's life, you know, they come out of the belly all nice and cuddly and soft. But after a few years, they're really playful. And after they get to sort of, you know, the 12, 13, 14, my goodness, they're a handful. That's why in some Buddhist traditions, they try to get the monks to ordain them as a temporary novice ordination, because they can't stand their kids anymore. They want to dump them on the monks and the nuns for childcare. And there's a reason for that, because, you know, it does actually help. Just sometimes the people you associate with, actually, they mould your character. And so one of the problems is, obviously, the kids, when they get to that age, they're hanging out with their friends, you know, aliens with aliens. And so no wonder sort of they get worse, feeding off each other, which is one of the reasons why it's great, if at all possible, you know, when they're school holidays, if mum or dad could be around. So they're not just hanging out with each other. They're hanging out with some good influences. But, you know, we're so busy, we can't really do that these days. Unless we're lucky we have grandpa and grandma who, you know, love their kids and they can hang out with them. Because that's a good influence. Because there is a classic Buddhist story about the bad elephant. I just was changing this around. That once upon a time, actually not once upon a time, recently in Perth Zoo, there was a wonderful elephant. Even though they were really big and strong, they would let the children play with them. Can the children still play with elephants in the zoo? No. Ah, oh, that's no good. I remember playing with an elephant when I was a kid. And they'd ride on the elephant's back. And the elephant would love that because, you know, it was getting attention. And even though, you know, an elephant comes from the forest and the jungles, even though, you know, it was in a cage, still, imagine the elephant in the zoo gets three good meals a day. You're lucky if you get one meal a day in the forest. And he doesn't have to worry about hunters. And he gets free medical care whenever the elephant gets sick, plenty of water, and a comfortable place to sleep every night. maybe air conditioned. Do the elephants get air conditioning in Persia? Maybe a bucket of water over them, but that's just as good. So the elephant was very, very happy in the zoo. But then what happened? You know, one day, so when some kids were visiting, the elephant squirted water all over them, soaked a lot of them, including the teacher. It never acted so naughty before. And a few days later, you know, when the elephant keeper was cleaning out the elephant poo, the elephant pushed her over into the poo. I thought a kid would laugh at that. And the elephant started to change. And so the elephant, the zookeepers, they got a doctor, a vet, see if there's anything wrong with the elephant. They checked it over, nothing wrong with it. And then they got a psychologist. There's lots of psychologists here. You can get dog psychologists, I know that, so I'm sure you can have elephant psychologists. Because the elephant was a female, they first thought it was menopause. Men blame women a lot for that. But it wasn't that at all. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with the elephant. So one of the keepers who comes to the temple here thought it must be some spiritual crisis, like a dark night of the soul for an elephant. Because people do get a bit crazy when their spirituality gets out of balance. So they asked one of the monks to go and find out. So late one night, when the zoo was closed, when it was dark and spooky, the monk went to meditate outside the elephant cage. And late at night, about 11 p.m., the monk heard some whispers in the background. It's really spooky. And some cackling laughter. He thought, my goodness, the zoo must be haunted. Or perhaps it's a meeting of vampires. People are really into vampires these days, I'm told. But a monk is strong and courageous, and he went to investigate. He wasn't afraid. And he followed the sound, and it wasn't ghosts. It wasn't vampires. Right behind the zoo was one of these garden shops. And in the back of the garden shop, there was a gang of drug dealers. And they were deciding, you know, who they're going to sell the drugs to and who they're going to get it from. And sometimes they were talking about who to punish for not paying the drug debts. Because if you get into drugs, you know, sometimes you lose a lot of money and you get into debts and you really get vicious beatings if you can't pay. And the monk realized what the problem was. In that garden shop, it wasn't just earthenware vessels they sold. That was not the only pot they sold in that place. And the monk found out what they were doing. So the next day, the police arrested all of those drug dealers. And the monk got his friends from the Buddhist Society of Western Australia to go behind the elephant stall and meditate and to spread loving kindness and to talk about all the wonderful things we are doing in the Buddhist Society, like building beautiful nuns' monasteries, and that's what that book is about having wonderful Katina ceremonies on the 4th of November, which is a wonderful thing to come about to and to talk about, and all the great service that we're giving to humanity. And it was such inspiring talks they were giving there that the elephant changed back again to his normal self. He became kind and gentle once more. And that's based on an old story told by the Buddha, only I just changed it a bit just to make it interesting. And the moral of that story is, they said that even elephants, if they keep hearing night after night, you know, the talk of drug dealers, and they talk of violence and hard, cruel speech, it does affect you. And even the elephant starts to become bad and ill-tempered. How much more so your kids? That's why people take their children to the Buddhist monastery. The kids become calmer and the monks become more ill-tempered. It works both ways. That's the trouble. But it's still understanding where it all comes from. Having some little bit of good influences. You know, it is just basically conditioning, brainwashing, which we're really into in Buddhism. That's why every time you come here, that's what we're doing in this place. We're brainwashing you in a very good way, though, taking all the negative stuff out and putting good stuff in as well. Because what you hear, what you see, what you think about, that becomes your character. That's who you are. So if you have got good kids, if you have got kids, try and take them to good places. Associate with good people as much as you can. Brainwash them as best you can. And if they refuse to come, there are many ways, many tricks to be able to do that. Trick number one is called bribery. And this was actually, I'm not just making this up, this actually comes from the old Buddhist texts. There was a famous Buddhist, you know, if ever you read his old scriptures of Buddhism, one of the most famous of all of the disciples of the Buddha was this man called Anathapindika, which actually meant feeder of the poor. He was a very generous person and a great disciple of the Buddha. And even though he would always go and listen to the Buddha, he was a meditator, done wonderful things, a very kind, good person. His son was just such a case, a really difficult boy. Would never do any, what do you have to do any work for when your father's rich? And so he was just a layabout. And Anathapindika thought, how can I teach my son something good? So what he did, he just said, okay, son, if you go to the temple, I'll give you $20. You don't have to do anything. Just sit in the back. You can play on your iPod, play on your sort of computer games, listen to your iPod. I don't care what. Just come and you get $20. And of course, for a kid, that was a lot of money. So we would come, sit in the back, would not listen at all, wouldn't meditate, would just sit in the back, playing around, week after week after week. But at least he came into the temple. And of course, what happened? Sooner or later, you get your kid to come into the temple enough, they get interested. I mean, what's this monk talking about anyway? Why is everybody laughing? And so instead of listening to his... Well, they did have iPods in those days, but you know what I mean. He was just playing around, not paying attention. And he began to listen. And when he listened to it, he liked what he heard. And so when he went home, all those $20 bills he got from his father, he gave back. He said, thank you, Dad. I don't need them anymore. Thank you for teaching me how valuable, you know, this spirituality is. And that's how he got his kid to come to the temple and be good. So bribery should be considered. And if that doesn't work, there's one of the people who usually goes and brings food to our monasteries. He's not here this evening. I'm just checking up so he doesn't get embarrassed. He had a son. And he was a bit older. He was still a handful because, you know, he had a girlfriend and they went out nightclubbing, you know, to the wee hours of every morning. And he was supposed to be at university, you know, doing a degree, which his father was paying a lot of money for. And you may have had that trouble with your kids. They're not doing well at school or university. Their grades are going down. You know, either they're hanging out with their mates or they're sort of going out with their girlfriends or boyfriends. And nothing the parents would say would change anything. Kids of that age, they will not listen to their parents. Even if you try reverse psychology and you tell your kid, because they always do the opposite of what you tell them. You tell your kid, stay out late tonight, son. Mum and dad like you going out late at night. Those orders they will follow. Kids are very smart. So that won't work. But this man was very, very smart. He waited up late one night when his son was out with his girlfriend, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And when they came home, he switched on the lights and there he was waiting for them. Come inside, he said. And his son was terrified. He thought, oh my God, what's my father going to do now? And when they came inside, he gave them a cup of coffee. And he didn't look at his son. He just talked to his son's girlfriend. And he said to his son's girlfriend, look, I've just been noticing you've been going out quite a while now. I don't know what your plans are, but, you know, who knows? It does happen. One day, you know, you might decide to commit together, even get married. But I'm sure you wouldn't want to marry someone who failed his degree. You wouldn't want someone who's a loser and a hopeless case. Because this is what's happening. Ever since he was going out with you, his grades have gone down, down, down. He's close to failing. Did you know that? My girlfriend said, no, I never knew that. He didn't tell me. I don't want to go out with a dummy. And from that, and he said, okay, I just thought I'd tell you. And then he went to bed and said, good night. That's all he needed to do. And he said from that night on, the girlfriend always made sure he got home early. The girlfriend always checked his grades to make sure he was doing his assignments on time. Because the boy would never listen to his parents, but my God, he'd listen to his girlfriend. It's called leverage. Whether it's financial by giving him some money, or just, you know, with a girlfriend, if you've got a girl, use a boyfriend, you know, to get the girl into sort of the right ways, because these are the people they listen to. And it works. So these are some practical suggestions. If you've got a kid who's misbehaving like that, use a bit of leverage, and it sometimes can work. Or, I don't know if this will work these days, but it used to do in the old days. Sometimes if you've got a friend who's actually in the police force, because it's one of the fellows who comes here regularly. He became a monk, but he was a bit sick. He told me the story, because he was raised in Georgia, you know, in Atlanta, in the southern United States. And, you know, being a kid, he was about 14 or 15, he had his first cigarette on the beach. And a police car came past. Kids are stupid. They think they're smart. Because as soon as they saw the police car, they started running. That's the last thing you should do. And so the police car ran after them and caught the two of them smoking on the beach. And they took them in the back of the police car and took them to the station. And there's always a policeman behind the desk, the sergeant, or whatever it was. And the sergeant never even looked up. As the policeman said, we just caught these two boys smoking on the beach. What should we do to them, Sarge? And without even looking up, the Sarge said, take them round the back and shoot them. He gave up smoking after that. Of course, the police would never do that, obviously, but just give them a bit of a scare sometimes would work. Unfortunately, we can't do that these days, nevertheless. But in the end, okay, your kids are causing you trouble. But because we're Buddhists, you know, the reason why is it's karma. Because of the things you did to your parents when you were young. It's just coming back to you, that's all. And I remember some of the stuff I did to my parents. My goodness, that's why I didn't have children. I'm too scared to take the karmic result back. What I did. But if you think what you did to your parents, and what your parents said to you, oh, you're crazy, you guy, work harder, you know, don't go out with the girls, do this, do that. They said that to you, but you turned out okay. At least some of you did. So in the end, sometimes we worry a bit too much about our kids. Yeah, they get into trouble. Yeah, sometimes they don't do the work. Yeah, sometimes they do naughty things. Yeah, they don't listen to their parents. But this is just the stage which people go through while they are going through adolescence. And one interesting piece of information I want to share with you, because I teach at conferences, you know, psychology conferences, computer conferences. I don't see the people invited me to Brisbane. It's Anthony and Johan here this evening? Instead of coming? No, that's the World... I gave a keynote address at the World Computer Conference. Yeah, I don't know anything about computers. But not knowing what I'm talking about has never stopped me ever since I came here. But they were visiting. I thought they might be here this evening. But anyway, at the, where was I going with this? At the computer conference. Oh, no, at another conference I went to, a psychology conference. There's one of these neuroscientists from the United States was actually saying that, and it makes so much sense, you know, as the brain develops, you know, as from a child, teenager to an adult, there's a part of the brain which develops, which is the part which can make decisions. Now, the evolution of the human being has been such that you never needed that capacity, you know, in previous generations. Until about 25 or 26, you never got authority, you know, in ancient cultures until about that time. Now, whether it's in the ancient tribes or in the village, you know, in Sri Lanka or in a family, you never had to make decisions for yourself until, you know, mid-20s at the earliest. And so because that has been a current in our evolution for millions of years, it means that the human body only develops that capacity to its fullness much later than the teenage years. As he explained, a teenager just does not have the software in the brain to make good decisions. Even though our culture asks them to, or their peers demand that they do, and they just can't make good decisions. That is just the nature of the game. But you know what happens? They manage to muddle through life, and they get to their 20s, and when they get to the mid-20s, they become much nicer people to live with. Their alien phase, when they're like they're from Mars and they don't understand, you know, you don't understand them at all, they actually come back again and they're sort of nice kids and they can relate to their parents and the parents can relate to them much, much better. It's just the evolution of the brain. In other words, it's natural. You can't do too much about it. You can limit it with these strategies, but sometimes you just have to accept these things. That's just kids being kids, teenagers being teenagers. And if you don't want that, then you shouldn't have kids. Get a dog instead, a nice little cat. They're much easier. Even a cat goes out at night, you don't worry what time they get back in. With a kid, you know, you're always worried. That's why I was just going through some old stuff early on. And they said, this was like a spiritual saying, that if you are happy and content all the time, if you can eat any food without getting a tummy ache, if you can sleep at night without drugs or alcohol, a really good sleep at any time, at any place, if you can be scolded by others and just be peaceful and smile, if you... what's the rest of it? If you can eat whatever you like at any time, or if you can wake up in the morning and be happy without a cup of coffee, then you must be the family dog. We humans can't do that. So let's just face it, that's who we are. And that's what our kids are like. So when you know the rules of the game, basically, you know what's in the contract. When you have a kid, it's said, yeah, there'll be a lot of fun. They wake you up in the middle of the night and there'll be good fun for a while. When they get to their teenage years, they'll give you hell. But afterwards, they'll be okay. When you know the rules of the game, then actually you can understand there's nothing wrong with you. Because a lot of time with kids and parents, sometimes the parents think there's something wrong with them. The parents take too much blame, which means they try and control their kids even more. I always like this thing, sort of, this is general Buddhism, whether it's meditation or life. It's because of fear, which we control too much. Behind all control is a fear of what might go wrong, what people will say about us, fear of the catastrophes which happen in life. And because in our society, we're a very, very fearful society. Always afraid of, you know, cancers and other illnesses, kids going wrong, going crazy, ghosts if you're an Asian, burglars if you're a Westerner. Always afraid of whatever. We're so afraid, that's why we lock our doors with these double locks, security systems. A good burglar can get through anything. Don't worry about that. But we're so afraid. And with kids, we're so afraid of our kids not doing well, getting into drugs or getting into bad company or whatever. Most kids manage to survive their teenage years. And it's not because of the parents. It's not in spite of the parents. It's just that's the nature of the game. So don't be so afraid. Because if you're afraid, you won't give your kids much freedom. And the kids will get worse. There's another lady, I'm not sure if she's here tonight. Her husband died of a heart attack when the kids were still very young, especially two teenage girls. And I remember she came up to ask me, because whenever there's any problem in the family, I was almost like a surrogate father for the kids. No other male in the family, so she'd always ask me for advice. I said, my kids want to go to nightclub. You know, they're only 18. I said, you're allowed to go to a nightclub when you're 18. But there's so many bad people in there. You know, it's alcohol, there's drugs, there's violence. I said, look, your kids are kids. Let them go, for goodness sake. Because if you refuse to let them go, they'll sneak out and go by themselves. So let them go. And so because, you know, she had confidence in me, the kids went out to the nightclub. I think once she got married here last year as a doctor, doing really well. The other one is, I think, an accountant, again, doing really well. We're really good kids. They're just having fun in life, that's all. The kids need to be trusted. But if you are fearful and a control freak, you never trust your kids, which means they never learn about responsibility, and they feel resentment of their parents for not letting them out and doing things. So please, trust your kids. Give them that responsibility. They may sort of fall over and make a fool of themselves every now and again, but they usually learn and grow. Because that's really what parents should be. In Buddhism, we say the parents are the gardeners, children of the seed. And your job is not to control that plant, but just nurture it, safeguard it as much as you can. But if you safeguard it from too much, it doesn't build up any resilience. So that's why we learn how to nurture our kids and expect all these things which happen. And don't be afraid when they do happen. Usually the kids, you know, they get through these things by themselves. And that is exactly the same with all of these other little childish things which we have inside, the little kid inside of ourselves, which doesn't want to be controlled, which just wants to be respected and appreciated. And if your kid ever scolds you and gives you, you know, bad speech, the only thing to say, use a kid's language. You know, they really swear at mum and dad. You just tell them, whatever. Use kids' speech back at them. Because why do kids even speak badly to their parents? It's only just to wind you up, to make you upset. Imagine what it is if anybody spoke to you in a bad way and you were just at peace with it. You never reacted. The only reason why people use bad speech, shout at you, swear at you, call you names, is to try and get a bad reaction, try and hurt you. And again, this is one of the psychology of Buddhism, which is very powerful. Whatever you react to, you reinforce. So if the kid does speak badly to you, whatever, don't react. When the kid speaks properly to you, then respond. So that way, what you are doing is actually reinforcing the positive behavior which you want to hear and ignoring the negative behavior. If you blow up and shout at the kid because they do negative behavior, it just reinforces that. That's basic psychology. That's how we understand things in Buddhism. So what you react to is what you reinforce. So little by little, you can influence your kids. In the same way, you can influence the people you live with. You can influence yourself as well. any sort of bad things which happen in your head, which in your mind, any bad thoughts, any bad stuff which happens, just please don't react to the bad stuff, but celebrate the good stuff. Kind thoughts, good thoughts, beautiful memories, those are the ones which we celebrate and keep. Bad speech, bad actions, whatever. In Buddhism, we just let them go. Don't react. When you don't react and ignore, you aren't feeding them. And they eventually vanish and disappear. And then what happens is your kid eventually grows up. And when he grows up, I always remember this wonderful saying by Mark Twain. Because I think Mark, because you love to actually use a bit of history. I think even that conference I went to where that neuroscientist said about the development of the human brain, decision-making part of the human brain only develops till about 25, 26. He flashed up on the screen a quote from Socrates, an ancient Greek philosopher 2,400 years ago, who also said, kids are such a pain in the neck, or something like that. As if you looked at the saying, it was something which could be said today. But there it was, in a different culture, in a different time, such a long, 2,400 years ago. Children don't change. They've always been like that. Don't think there's something wrong. This is just kids being kids. Understanding that, it gives you a sense of confidence that they'll work through this, and you'll work through this. But with Mark Twain, was Mark Twain about 70, 80 years ago? The American author and humorist. He once wrote, because he ran away from home, he couldn't stand his father when he was about 17 or 18, he ran away. And he came back home about 4 or 5 years later. And he wrote, he couldn't believe how much his father had grown up in those 4 or 5 years. And you laugh, so you got the idea. He wrote that because obviously his father had been the same. He had grown up and learned how to appreciate his mum and dad. So if your kids don't appreciate you now, if they think you're dinosaurs, you don't understand, and they just that you are just like from Mars and just, you know, you're really out of touch with reality as a parent, don't worry so much. In 4 or 5 years, you will grow up in your kid's eyes. In other words, your kid will be able to appreciate you far more. So sometimes in life, we just have to bear with things for a little while, knowing that they will get better. It's just like when you go to a hospital to have an operation, you've got some sickness, as long as you know it's going to get better, you can bear with things. As long as you know it's going to change, there's no problem. So the kids do change, just like you did, just like I did. And because of that, you can have that sort of that faith that this too will pass. So no matter what your kid has been up to, no matter what they've been doing, it will pass. And some of the stuff which kids got up to. I remember one of the people who also came here. They came up to me because they were summoned to the police station. You know, you'll know this girl, but I won't say who she is. That she was summoned to the police station. And the police showed them a video of their son trashing a train. One of these vandals who go into the train, spray cans, trashing everything, you know, in the depot in the middle of the night. They couldn't believe that was their son, but there he was on video. He's a really nice boy now. He's grown up. Sometimes the kids do these crazy, stupid things. Why they do that? Too much testosterone, I don't know, but they usually sort of, you know, get back in. It's really not them, it's the hormones. So after a while, they get back into line and they become very good human beings. So if that is your son or that is your daughter, never mind. It's par for the course. They will get through that, as many kids do. So don't worry so much as parents. Don't go overboard. Just a wonderful thing about Buddhism. We've got this really beautiful long-term view. We're very calm and tolerant and peaceful because we know that these things will work their way out after a while. So this too will pass. We bear with it. We don't overreact. We don't lose our own sleep while our kids are doing. And that way, after a while, you know, we've nurtured the kid. It's just the thing they have to go through. Just like sometimes it's the things which we have to go through. The seasons of the life. Even when things look really hopeless, because, you know, you're in really big trouble. It's just like, you know, the place where I came from in England, in the winter time, you can't see any life in the forest. Everything is dead. There's no leaves on the trees. There's no sort of grass. Well, there's a bit of grass on there, but everything is like dead. There's no flowers coming out. But you always know at winter time that all those seeds are in there. It's just waiting for the time to mature. You know, which is the springtime. Or just like here in Australia, just when we have the bushfires. During our rains retreat, actually there was an arsonist somewhere around Serpentine because they lit a couple of fires, and one was in Jhana Grove in a corner. But you know, even if there is like a bushfire, you know, everything looks so dead afterwards and so hopeless. But we know just there's so much seed under the ground just coming up. Now, we had a huge bushfire, those of you who remember this, one of the worst bushfires with trees exploding, because I was there at the time in 1991, January the 31st. At that time, it was the hottest day ever in Western Australia, 46.2 or 3 degrees. It's now the second hottest day, because a couple of weeks later, there was a day which was even hotter. And that was the day a big bushfire came through Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine. And I was there at the time. Trees. It's amazing to see, because when it gets that hot, you know, the eucalypt oil from the leaves and the bark vaporizes. And so there's this big blue sheen around the tree. That's where they get the blue mountains from. And in that haze, it's oil vaporized with oxygen. It just needs a spark. It's a bomb. That's why it explodes. It's amazing to see, just boom! And a whole tree is up in flames. Just instantaneously from the top to the bottom. And that was a fire which went right through our monastery. And afterwards, it was like one of these battlegrounds. Not a bit of green left. Just charred stumps of trees. And you wouldn't believe. You know, we still got the photographs to see that monastery at that time. And to see it now. There's life in devastation. So if you really get upset, your kid is in big trouble, and you think it's really hopeless, they're ruining their life, they're destroying everything, don't worry, there's a lot of life inside kids. Give them a bit of chance, give them a bit of help, hope, whatever, and they'll come through it, just like trees come through bushfires. And that way, you don't need to get so upset with your kids. You don't need to get so paranoid that your kid is going to fail. Give your kid a chance. Give them encouragement. Give them a bit of slack when they're growing up. Give them some good advice as well. A lot of times we think the kids never listen to us. They do listen to their parents. Just they don't admit it, that's all. They don't want to admit it because it's not done. But they do listen and they do respect. They do love, even if they don't show it. So, trust them a little bit more. You'll have a happier life. And so will them. And later on in life, you know, when they get 25, you can laugh at all the stupid things they did. I did many stupid things to my parents. Oh, what was one of the things I did? I'm not sure if I mentioned this. I think I mentioned this to the monks. You think I'm a very, very good monk. And a very kind, they've got a good reputation. But it's nice to say where you came from. One of the things I did, it was my mother's birthday. And I was maybe only about 7, 8 years of age, 9 maybe. And I decided to get my mum a special present. This was in London. Now, to give you some background, at that particular year, there was like a food craze going on in London. There was a dish from the East End of London called eels and mashed potatoes. And you know, it was from the east part, but it went all over London. And so they had all these, instead of fish and chip shops, eels and mash shops. That's all they served. And so I went to the shop as a 9-year-old boy and asked for an eel, a live one. And they would give them because, you know, you cook them at home. But I wasn't about to cook an eel. Instead, I got a nice little box and I put the eel inside the box and wrapped it with this beautiful, like, gift paper, you know, with, like, flowers on it. And put one of these little gift cards, you know, to Mummy, love on your birthday from your son. My lay name was Peter. To Mummy, love Peter. And I presented it to my mother. And imagine you're a mum and you got a little gift, you know, from your son. Oh, you just, you know, a special gift. You feel so good. And I was looking at my mum with a sweet cherubic smile. And she opened it with excitement. And when she opened the lid, ah! My goodness, I never heard her scream that loud before. And what did her loving son do? I was just laughing and laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. That is what it's like when you're a kid. My poor old mum having to put up with that. So for all the mums and dads here, to bring up your kids and get through that far, you've done a wonderful job. You've obviously had your stories of what your kids got up to and all the difficult things. And I'm sure that most parents at some time thought, oh, my kid, my son, my daughter, what the heck is going to happen to them? They're really turning out badly. They're terrible. Don't worry so much. Most of the kids, they turn out okay, no problem at all. And if you really are having trouble with them, really having trouble with them, they're not doing well at school, they're not doing well at college or university, threaten them. Tell them, if you don't pass year 12, there's only one place for you. We're sending you to Buddhist monastery. Oh no, they'll say, no, no, no. Only one meal a day, meditating. No TV, no CD player, none of that. No, 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 no. You can just take them down for 1 or 2 days just to see, this is how you're going to live. If you, and they'll go back home and they'll go back and they'll do all their homework very well. But whatever you do, the kids will be okay. I've got a lot of trust in the human beings. That's one of, people think I'm a fool doing this because sometimes even prisoners in jail I've seen. I've seen some wonderful prisoners in jail. So how can you trust and love people so much? And there's some people done terrible things. They can always see something really good in people. And I'm sure you can see all the good in your kid. Please see the good in your children. Don't just see their faults. Don't be always on their back, you know, telling them of all the terrible things they're doing, not cleaning up their bedroom, not doing this, whatever. Because if that's all they hear from their parents, what sort of relationship is that? They need a bit of support as well, a bit of praise. And you can only do that if you, the parents, can see the good in your kids. They're not half as bad as you think. Look at them that way. What you see is what you get. And if you see the good in your kids become much better. And you have a much better relationship with them. And you have a much easier life. And not so much suffering. Not so much suffering that you ring me all the way from Utah to complain. The kids will survive, even though they may be going through some stuff. They will survive, and so will you. And when they get about 25, then they will realize how much Mum and Dad have grown up. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you. Uh-oh. I'm online. Oh, my goodness.
Here we go. First of all, we have Emily from USA. Dear Ajahn Brahm, I have a 16-year-old daughter. She's a good kid. What advice can you give her for navigating the day-to-day teenage challenges, schoolwork, peers, wanting freedom, and so on? If she's a good kid, you're doing well. Whatever you're doing so far, carry on. She's a good kid. 16-year-old. By that time, they're usually getting a bit sort of... independent. So what advice can you give for navigating the day-to-day teenage challenges, schoolwork, peers, wanting freedom, and so on? Really build her up, especially for girls. The pressure is on to be beautiful, to be hot. And not every kid can be hot. So the poor kid, you know, is having a lot of pressure on her. She has to be hot to the boys. She has to do well at school. She has to do this and do that. And it's just so tough. So what she needs from mum and dad is lots and lots and lots and lots of praise. Because, you know, she needs that support. At least she's got one place, home, where she doesn't have to compete. She doesn't have to be something she's not. She's accepted and loved for who she is. Well, you know, I didn't want to say this story again, but, you know, it was one of the stories from my own life, you know, that story of the opening the door of your heart with my father, because I was about 13. About that age, we were rebelling. And he took me aside and said, "Son, whatever you do in your life, wherever you go, however you turn out, I want to let you know the door of my house will always be open to you." And I realized later on he meant his heart. As a 13-year-old, that meant an incredible amount to me. It meant that, yes, it was a struggle at school, you know, to be accepted by your peers, to be able to speak, you know, in such a way that people liked you, to be able to go out with the girls and get girlfriends, you know, to be popular, and also to be good at sport, which you had to be in those days as a boy. There's so much pressure on you. And then my dad comes along and said, "Look, you have no pressure at all at home. However you turn out, I'll always be your dad and love you." That was incredible powerful to me. I knew there was one place in the whole world, one person who would just accept me even if I failed. Even if I got into trouble, he would never abandon me. That meant so much, as I think you can understand. So, all parents, please say that to your kids and mean it. Not just because I ask you to, because you know why you should do that. You know, son, daughter, however you turn out in life, if you fail every subject, if you end up sort of on the streets or whatever, you know, if you sort of, I don't know what happens to you, the worst things, I'll always be your mum and dad. I'll always love you and care for you. And this will always be your home. I'll never lock you out. It's one place. You know you're accepted, no matter who you are. Because I'm your dad, I'm your mum. That really gets very deep inside a kid. They understand that. And they value that so much. Where they're fighting for acceptance in the whole world, they have one place where acceptance is given. At least one place. So that's a good thing to be able to do. So, Emily, please tell that to your 16-year-old daughter. Maybe then she will tell that to others as well. And the world will be a much nicer place. And as for her schoolwork, look, you know, you don't have to do well at school to be successful in life. I saw, you know, Richard Branson's biography. You know, I don't think he finished school. And he's a multi-billionaire. So all your kids, you know, who are doing year 12 this year, and they're doing terribly. That could be the next Richard Branson, the next Bill Gates. So many people, they didn't finish university. It's good they do finish university, but if they don't, there's still lots of hope for them. So schoolwork is not that important. And wanting freedom and so on, yeah, it's good to give your kids some freedom, but, you know, with freedom comes responsibility. And it's that responsibility which is also important to give with the freedom. And I tell them, look, if you come home late, just give us a call if you get stuck anywhere. Mum and dad are here if you get into trouble. But go out and test the boundaries. That's what you're going to do anyway. So if the kids are going to do that anyway, you might as well give them permission to do it. Because they're going to do it anyway. If they got permission, then your relationship is still good. Okay. Question 2, Bruce from Perth. When is it time to remove an addicted child from home? When they will not give up substance abuse, even after rehabilitation, is destroying our lives. Okay, now this is not the normal sort of kid when they really get into a substance addiction. And that, of course, is where you do need, you know, professional help. And no professional help is the psychologists, the counsellors, and everything else. It doesn't actually say how old the child is. Usually, you know, if they're addicted, they're not really children, they're young men, young women. So if it is substance abuse, sometimes to try and get that kid, you know, obviously, first of all, to realise what it's doing to their brain. And especially like, you know, things like ice, methamphetamines, it fries your brain. And most kids understand that. You just got to keep saying, look, this is what's going to be like for you. This is where you want to be. Is this what you want to do? And of course, one of the first things to do, if they are addicted, is to try and isolate them from those bad friends. Just like, you know, that elephant story and the drug dealers. You know, because when they have bad influence, they're not strong enough to resist those temptations from their peers. Take away their mobile phone, give them a better version with a new number, which, you know, no one knows. Even move them to another place so they don't have the same peer pressures. Sometimes taking them away from those influences gives them a chance. I know that a lot of kids, they want to give up those substance abuse. They really do, because they realize what it's doing for them. But they're too weak to say no when their peers give them a call. So sometimes you need to just give them a new mobile phone, change the numbers, move to a different address, different school or whatever. Sometimes that is a positive thing you can do. Most of the kids, they don't want to end up like that. Anyway, that's a big question there. And fortunately, there is a lot of support these days, you know, from psychologists and others. Question 3 from Melbourne. Today I caught my 9-year-old boy trying to hide his homework from me. Isn't that cute? I am very sad and still thinking how to advise him on this. Please, Ajahn Brahm, what should I do? He's a good boy, but I should do something for this. That is what I feel. Oh, the poor old kid hiding his homework. Just tell him, look, son, the door of my heart's always open to you. It doesn't matter if you don't do well in your homework. Mummy, daddy still loves you to bits. And so obviously the kid is afraid he's not living up to his parents' expectations. So maybe, you know, you should look at just what you're teaching your kid. Only half the children in Australia can be above average intelligence. Okay? I don't think, no, that's other people's kids, not mine. So some kids won't do well at school. It's obvious. So if that's your kid, don't take your love away from them and say you're a failure, you're hopeless because you didn't get to university. Oh, please, you give your kids too hard a time. So he's hiding his homework from me. That means he must be in a little bit of trouble. But he's only 9 years of age. He can soon do much better than that. So if that's the case, just now laugh and just try and change your attitude towards your kid. And when the kid doesn't do very well at school, remember that story which, when I was a school teacher, when one of the kids in my class, at the end of the year when I gave out the report cards, they came bottom. 30th in the class of 30. And when I handed him his report card and he saw he'd come bottom of the class, I saw his face, his jaw dropped, his shoulders hunched. You didn't need to be a mind reader to know what was going on in his head. How am I going to show this to my parents tonight? 30th, bottom of the class. I'm going to get into big trouble. Even my friends are going to call me a dummy. He was depressed. And even then, I would not just sit around when someone is depressed. I went up to that kid to cheer him up, but also to teach him some Buddhism. The whole school knew that I was a Buddhist. I actually taught them meditation one day. That's another story. But I went up to this kid and I said, "You come bottom of the class." "Yes, sir." I said, "Wonderful. Very good. Bahoma Hondai. Bagus in Malaysian. D mark in Thai. You know, I know the word very good in many languages. I don't know the word very bad. I just don't know that word. I refuse to learn it. Just bagus." That's it, Bahasa, Indonesia. "Very good." And I said, "I'm going to teach you some Buddhism." Because in Buddhism, especially Mahayana Buddhism, we have this concept of the Bodhisattva. I'm sure you've heard that before, the Bodhisattva. And a Bodhisattva is someone who sacrificed everything for the sake of others. To make somebody else happy is their goal in life. To alleviate other people's suffering is their joy. And I said, "I understand why you came bottom this year. You're the Bodhisattva. You've sacrificed on purpose, I'm sure. You deliberately came bottom this year so that none of your friends will have to suffer what you're going to get tonight from your parents. You decided to voluntarily take on that suffering out of compassion for your friends." And I said, "I'm going to recommend you, just you, to the headmaster this year for the Bodhisattva Prize at our school. The one who wasn't... all your friends, they're just selfish, thinking about themselves and what they're doing at school. But you are thinking of others by taking the very last place which no one else likes. You're a true Bodhisattva." And this kid looked up at me as if I was crazy. Which I suppose I was. But at least it got him out of his depression. And he laughed. "It's not the end of the world coming bottom of the class." But then I mentioned to him, "But remember, you're only allowed to come Bodhisattva once. Next year, let someone else take that position." So that way, when you say that to your kids, you know, the kids, they don't get upset to come bottom of the class. They can get top of the class next year. Who cares? But it's not the end of the world. And they won't hide the report card from you. And they won't hide the homework. They realize mum and dad loves them. And there's things which are more important in life than coming top. So that's the answer too. The lady from Melbourne. I won't tell the name, otherwise they might get embarrassed. Because everybody, many people in Melbourne listen to this podcast. And if I give your name, they'll go around saying you've got a dumb kid. So anyway, so that's the talk for this evening. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope to see you next week for another talk, another time, another place, another subject. See you again.